Okay, then let's move on to Rafia Huda Cook, who is going to be the polar opposite of everything. Here he is, called among his followers Rabbeinu. You have to know the terminology. If you're in the cook crowd, the cookian crowd, as they call it, Harav or Maran Harav, or just Maran, always refers to Rav Cook. Whereas if you're in the Sephardic world, Maran either refers to, if it's Maran Zasal, it's the Shulchan Aruch, and if it's Maran Shlita, it's Rav Avad Yosef, because there's only one Maran. If they talk about Rabbeinu Zatzal, Rabbeinu, our rabbi, that's Rav Tzvi Yehuda. Now, a couple years ago, 3 years ago, Haaretz had an article, "The Ten Who Made Israel What It Is, As Israel Celebrates 57 Years of Independence." I don't know if they did this year. Haaretz presents its list of the 10 figures who have most influenced the development of the Jewish state. And here they are in order. 1, David Ben-Gurion. I think we can all agree that David Ben-Gurion is 1. 2, Menachem Begin. 3, Yitzhak Rabin. 4, Anwar Sadat. So maybe, truthfully, it was Sadat that began the peace, which, so, okay, you might disagree with that. 5, Ariel Sharon. 6, Yasser Arafat. 7, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, the 7th most important person in making Israel what it is, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook. 8, Golda Meir. 9, Shimon Peres. And 10, believe it or not, Amos Oz. And he has had a great influence on the elites, the secular elites. You know, the Tel Aviv Secular Elite Society, Amos Oz, has been the most important intellectual force. So here you have Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, who's listed, he's described, prophet of Greater Israel. His teachings inspired the modern religious settlement movement in the territories. Now, who was this figure? Who is this figure who had more influence on Israel than any other rabbi, more than many politicians, a figure who for many is a great religious visionary, and for others who is nothing less than a false prophet, who more than anyone else is responsible for the major roadblock from Israel's side to any comprehensive settlement with the Arabs? He is a unique figure in so many ways, an exciting figure, as I hope I'll be able to get across, because even if you don't agree with what he says, there is an excitement there, in that Haredi Judaism we know is about conserving the past, trying to keep, even though they do make changes, but the changes are always imperceptible to them. The sort of the normal changes that always happen in society, but they're not conscious changes for the most part. Haredi Judaism, like for example the Shirim just developed because the Chazon Ish, not like anyone got together and said, we're going to change it for the sake of change here. Let's see you to cook. Changes for the sake of change, because now we're living in a different society, we must change the way things have been done. So there's a certain, as I said, a power and excitement in that. When I first came to Harvard graduate school in 1989, Harvard has the largest Hebrew library in America, at least they've had for the last 20 years. They buy every single Hebrew book printed in the world. There are books we have in Harvard that they don't have in Israel, in the Jewish National University Library, because Charlie Berlin gets every book published not only in Israel, but every one published in America. Now, in Israel, they get every book published in Israel automatically, and they buy a number of books from outside Israel, but they don't have the budget to track down every single book published in Borough Park by some rabbi. But Charles Berlin, who's the head librarian at Harvard, he made his business for the last 30 years that every single book, including the not just every book, every children's book, he has every children's book ever published in the last 35 years. He buys it all, and all the Hasidic stuff, etc. So it's huge. Oh, they even bought the TIM CDs. And if they didn't buy some, contact them and they will buy them. To his credit, he was the first one to recognize the power of tapes. You all remember why the most important force in bringing Khomeini to power, it was the tapes that were smuggled out that made it way to France. About 30 years ago, you begin the Haredi world, these tapes begin appearing of rabbis. Now, you know, they're CDs, you get them online, but they were tapes that were not part of our culture so much, but were very much part of Haredi culture, especially in Israel. You had, Amnon Yitzchak begins with this, and others. Charles Berlin, he has the world's largest collection because Jewish National Library in Jerusalem doesn't buy these. So there are people who wanted to do writings, work on these tapes, these Kirov tapes, you know, the Sephardic Bali Tshuva tapes. They had to come to America because he has the largest collection. One other thing, they have the largest collection of ephemera from elections. They don't collect this anywhere else. During the Israeli elections, he sends people to Israel who collect all the posters, all the little nothing, the papers, the pamphlets that are handed out at election rallies. They're not kept in the Jerusalem Library. I don't know if anyone keeps it. Charles Berlin at Harvard, they keep all this stuff, which in 20 years and 50 years, even now, I mean, wouldn't we love to see, you know, the little pamphlets handed out by Franklin Roosevelt or by Abraham Lincoln? And so he's, and Harvey says, everything published except for Kabbalah Center. But if they published in Hebrew, he would buy it, Harvey. It's only English he probably doesn't buy it. At least when I was there, he told me everything in Hebrew. And let me tell you, some of the junk they buy there, it's, the Kabbalah Center is much better than that stuff. So, I don't know. Although Harvey, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Harvey is a librarian, but Charles Berlin told me on more than one occasion, we will buy everything written in Hebrew. Didn't matter what. So who is this figure? As I said, when I came to Harvard, I remember in the card catalog, books written by him, it was about, I think it was 13 or 14, books written by him and about him. I believe it was 14. Now I went to the catalog earlier today, and things written by him, 67, that's in 25 years, and numerous things written about him. So he's a very important figure, and even for those of you who are going to disagree with much of his outlook, as I said, he's very different than Rav Shach. I think you'll have to agree that he was the rabbi, he was very much like Rav Shach in one way. I can't think of anyone else other than Rav Shach, and they were contemporaries, and they battled each other, as we'll see, other than Rav Shach and Rav Yehuda, who else lived and died by this phrase, lo taguru, you cannot be afraid. Like the Torah says, you know, and rabbis understand it, dayanim, rabbis cannot be afraid. The bottom line is every rabbi is afraid. They're afraid of how they're going to be treated, of this and that. And Rav Yehuda, as we'll see, published a whole pamphlet, proclamation, lo taguru. Rav Shach, not afraid of anything. And therefore he suffered so much because he said all sorts of stuff that came back and caused people to oppose him. But he didn't care. He spoke the truth. Rav Yehuda, not afraid, lo taguru, said what he believed in saying. And it's very rare to find rabbis like that. And I'm not even saying it's a good thing. Many rabbis, they don't say things because they think it's going to have a negative influence, not because they're afraid of their own personal kavod, but they think it's going to create machlokes and problems and all that. But from Rav Yehuda and Rav Shach, it was Yikov Adin et Ahar. Say the truth like the prophets of old and let the chips fall where they may. Why would Meir Kahana make the top 10? What was his accomplishments? How did he at all influence the state of Israel? He got his party banned. Explain to me how Meir Kahana had any influence whatsoever on the development. Had he remained in Knesset and had he achieved the numbers, but at the end of the day, if you look back historically, what did he achieve? He had no lasting contributions. We'll see Gush Emunim had enormous achievements, but what achievements did Meir Kahana have that would make him, right before he was killed and before they banned him, they said that polls were showing he would have gotten 10 seats in the Knesset, which is why they had to ban him. And it could be the army supported him, but if you look back, what did he achieve in retrospect? He has no legacy, either fortunately or unfortunately, but he had no legacy. He was the first one to call attention to the demographic threat. And then you had people like the Eitan, the one who was killed, they call him Gandhi, who also spoke about transferring of the Arabs, but he was a little calmer in how he did it, and he didn't use the harsh rhetoric of Kahana that got his party banned. So he was the first person to call attention to this rhetoric. But at the end of the day, and I went with my father even interviewed him, we went together in Israel in the 70s, early 80s, 1982, and he had his Museum of the Potential Holocaust. He was speaking about these things years ago. So in that sense, he was the first one to call attention to the demographic problem. But I don't see how you consider him as having any significance in the state. He had no influence. He had no real Israeli following whatsoever. He had more of an influence in America. He was the one who brought the Soviet Jewry movement, really. He was the one that really brought Soviet Jewry to the public's attention. He was the one that began the patrols, the Shomim patrols. So he had more of an influence in America, although even that was an influence for 10, 20 years. It doesn't live on. His most significant influence, maybe, is in the Igros Moshe, one of the responses dealing with Bas Mitzvah as addressed to Meir Kahana when he was a rabbi in Bensonhurst, the name of the place where these white kids killed the black kids by the airport. I forgot the name of the area. It was the big trial in Queens. Somewhere right, Howard Beach. I believe it was Howard Beach, yeah. So 2 more minutes on Rav Tzvi Yehuda. But let's first begin by looking at the biography. Rav Tzvi Yehuda was born in 1891. He was the only son of his father, Rav Avram. Rav Avram is a Kohen Cook, the great Rav Cook, and his wife. Now, Rav Tzvi Yehuda's mother, I saw that Wikipedia gets this all wrong. Rav Tzvi Yehuda's mother, I think it was Wikipedia I saw. Rav Tzvi Yehuda's mother was the second wife of Rav Cook. Rav Cook's first wife died. And then he married a second wife. The first wife was the daughter of the Aderis, the great Eliyahu David Rabinowitz Teomim, who became the Rav of Jerusalem and died shortly after coming. I think it was in 1905, maybe, shortly after, 1906, shortly after coming to Israel, to the land of Israel. He dies, but a very, very important figure, very close to his son-in-law, Rav Cook. After he dies, Rav Cook marries the Aderis's twin brother's daughter, that is the cousin of his first wife. His name was Binyamin, and his name is, why they call himself Rabinowitz Teomim? Teomim means twins. Both of them were twins. In fact, the Aderis, only now are they publishing his Sfarim, and it's quite interesting, because Satmar somehow got hold of a lot of the manuscripts, and they published a number of them, and the religious Zionists have a number of the manuscripts. In fact, Yeshivas Oratzion is involved in publishing one of them. Rav Druckmann's yeshiva, they published the Tshuvos, Ma'an Eliyahu, which came out a couple of years ago. It's interesting, I pointed out on the Sfarim blog, they don't know, these people in Israel, who Rav Yaakov Yosef is, the chief rabbi of New York. Had they known, they wouldn't have published the Tshuva where he's attacking some fraud, some charlatan named Yaakov Yosef, who's just become rabbi in New York. But for some reason, the Aderis didn't like him very much. If you look in Rivka Blau's book about her father, Rabbi Tice, there's stuff in there about the Aderis because it was their family. Okay, it's 10 o'clock already, so we will stop here, and certainly the next class and probably the class after that, I don't know if we'll get to the Nazir, will be devoted to Rav Tzvi Yehuda and his significance. So if we have questions or comments, we can take them now. Yeah, we'll get to that. I mean, that's the big issue. Rav Amital is a big opponent of Rav Tzvi Yehuda. Not just Rav Amital, Michal Neharai, professor now at Bar-Ilan. He was one of the Rabbeim at Merkaz, and he had a falling out with Rav Tzvi Yehuda because he dared put forth the heresy that Rav Tzvi Yehuda, who's the Rosh Yeshiva, was not necessarily always accurately portraying his father's ideas. And that created a big dispute, and he was forced to leave the yeshiva. But we'll get into that. That's really the crux of the issue. Rav Tzvi Yehuda called himself Ahem Shech Absoluti. I am the absolute continuation of my father. Not everyone, in fact, not even all of the Talmidim of Rav Cook agree with that. There's no transcript that I know of, although there is a transcript, yes, but not tape. It's been a number of places you can find the transcript of what he says. If you go to the Tzohar website, they have, if I'm not mistaken, and Jeffrey Wolf has on his website, Rav Lichtenstein's attack against these Dayanim. I don't know if Rav Lichtenstein, he doesn't really talk about the halachic issues at all. In fact, Rav Lichtenstein's not a posek. What he simply says is that anyone who calls Talmidei Chachamim, Dayanim, Torah scholars, Rishayim, the way that they were called, has forfeited any claim to be, to be given respect in the Torah world. So Rav Lichtenstein's not getting involved in the nitty-gritty of the psak. Just the rhetoric used. Let me clarify briefly now, because if you're going to go read it, one of the big issues here is the so-called forgeries of Rav Druckmann. There's two issues here. One is that there's not proper Kabbalah Smitzos, which I think is a complete fraud on the part of the Dayanim, because they haven't yet established what the Beis Din is trying to do. But the fraud is the interesting aspect. Rav Druckmann signed conversion documents that he was, and he signs it as one of the Beis Din. And he was not at the Beis Din. And this is how it came down. How do you understand a document? You have these people who are going to have these conversion documents, and they need to then get married in Israel. They need to show it to the government that they're Jewish. These are not halachic documents of the sort that, if you're a get. Obviously, the Dayan has to sign it. He has to be there. These are, at least Rav Druckmann felt, that these are simply it's no different in Reb Druckman's opinion. When I go into the local restaurant here in my town, there's a hashgacha certificate by the rabbis on the VOD that it's under their supervision, but they're never there. They don't come in to check it. They have people who work for them. Rav Druckman saw this as simply a bureaucratic thing, and that these dayanim are working under him, and therefore he can sign the document, and he signs it even as, you know, as a member of the basin. He claimed that it was enough. As long as he went in and saw the tevila, it didn't really matter if he was involved. And there's a standard form that we are the basin, that the convert came before, and technically he wasn't there, but he felt that this is no different than the mashgiach saying that this is under my supervision and I make sure that everything is okay, when the fact is he doesn't make sure, the person working for him. The chief rabbis, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu and Rav Avram Shapiro, told him he shouldn't do this, and he stopped doing it. But this, if you read about what this, the forgeries are, this is what they're talking about, and I don't know, to me, I guess Rav Druckman was wrong, because the chief rabbi said you shouldn't do that, but this doesn't affect the halachic nature of the conversions to begin with. But that's this business. It's really a bureaucratic issue here. And the proof of it is that Rav Yisrael Rosen, who was so angry about this, and he's head of Soma, he wrote the letters that are quoted by this Dayan, he came out with this statement this last week, which is as harsh as I've ever seen, that the Haredi Dayanim are trying to take over everything, and they don't care about anyone else. It's just their Lithuanian closed mind in this. And he's the one who was the big enemy of Rav Druckman in this, because he thought this is not how you run a Beis Din. So I don't, it's not, but it's not a halachic issue. And to call Rabbi Druckman a Rasha, I mean, this is a man with thousands of Talmidim, one of two Yehuda's leading Talmidim. So it's beyond the pale. Yes, he should have made it clear. There's no question that. And Rav Shapiro and Mordechai Yahu told him this is incorrect, that you cannot write that. And even I'm not sure if he was even at all the tefillas, because some apparently took place in Warsaw, but he did say to Rabbi Rosen that he thinks it's enough as long as he goes to the tefillah, but Rav Shapiro said that's not enough, and that you shouldn't sign like that. He thought it was more of a document that they can then show, because if it's some nobody rabbi. But if it's Rav Druckman, who, you know, the head of the conversion authority, Rosh Yeshiva, he thought that would give it more significance. And yes, you're right, it was a mistake, and both chief rabbis said, but Rav Amar and the others is saying that this doesn't affect it whatsoever, and that these are valid conversions. So I don't know. Yeah, okay. Any other comments? I don't know. Well, remains to be seen whether this is going to be, the people in Israel are talking like this is the great break, and that we no longer can live together with the Haredim because they've shown that they just treat us like we're nothing. And, you know, there have been cases like this before, and they've come back from the brink. But, you know, if they do establish their own Batei Dinim, which they say they're going to, that is that the religious Zionists will no longer go to the state courts, then basically you've now created two systems, and... maybe it'll be for the best. It remains to be seen. Okay, good. Then one more. Okay. We'll look for that, Rabbi Kelm, and I look forward to hearing about
that. If we can work out the details, don't tell anybody yet. It's not like finalized, but for those who are still online, I have the agreement in theory of Barry Freundel from the RCA, who negotiated the deal with the chief rabbinate. Rev, you know, Benny Lau, who's come up with the idea of the break, and Seth Farber from, you know, E-Team, who works with working the converts through the Israeli system, and Yitzhak Adlerstein, who wrote a quasi-defense of the Pesach on the Cross Currents blog. All four of them have agreed to come on online panel. It's just now we have to work out all the details, how and the time difference. We hopefully will finalize the next day, the idea is to do it before Yom Tov. How Shavuos is the holiday of Geirus, so we'll have like a week to publicize it, and if it gets off the ground, believe me, I hope so.
Exciting.
I imagine we'll get a nice crowd for that, and we'll see how it goes online. And then I'm hoping to do something in Toronto live, maybe with Rav Avior, who is the former Rosh Yeshiva in Toronto at Or Chaim, where I went to school, who was on the Beit Din with Rav Druckman.
He's one of the Rishayim.
That would only help people who live in Toronto, so if you want to move here,
yes, he is called one of the
house. I know a good real estate agent. Whatever. Okay, hopefully that's going to happen, but it's not finalized yet.
Okay.
Anyways,
Thanks, Mark, again for
a great, most interesting class, okay. And we'll see you next week on Memorial Day.
Okay, let me just make one more comment.
Canada, Mexico, or the United States.
Okay, one more comment. Rav Avior was the Rosh Hashiva of what? Of the B'nai Akiva Yeshiva?
Rav Avior was the Rosh Hashiva in Or Chaim. They used to have Shlichim as the Rosh Hashiva. So this is talking 25 years ago, when he was the Rosh Hashiva for 3 years.
Okay.
But then he sat on the Beit Din with Rav Truchman. He did a lot of the Gior itself. And so I spoke to him on the phone like last week. So
okay.
We just have to see if we can work that out. That's a little bit more complicated.
Okay. I just want to say, and this is something you can then ask them if you're of involvement, you saw the RCA strong statement against this Beis Din. I don't think there's any question, and we all know why the RCA made this agreement, and Rabbi Adorstein in his piece spoke about how we need to have one standard, which, like I pointed out in my essay, what this basically means then is that the religious Zionists post-scheme always have to go by the Haredim. You know, I saw someone made a comment which makes sense that why not just have everyone do their own thing, and then if you want to intermarry with the Haredims, then you do a separate conversion. But why should our conversions have to follow their approach? But if the RCA, their whole basis of their agreement was that they were given assurance that no RCA conversions will be questioned, who gave that assurance? Rabbi Amar. And yet we see that that assurance is meaningless, because Rav Amar also said that Rabbi Druckmann's conversions cannot be questioned because this is operating under the chief rabbinate, and the Dayanim are independent, and they throw all this out. So there is absolutely no guarantee. If army decisions from 25 years ago freeing a woman can be questioned, if Israeli government Batei Dinim can be questioned, then certainly the RCA can be questioned, and the chief rabbi doesn't have the control on this. So if the RCA thinks that their conversions will not be questioned, they're crazy. Because these Dayanim couldn't care less about the RCA. As far as they're concerned, it's they make the rules.
It's Leibovitz like usual in the Jewish world.
Yeah, okay. Rav Shaul Yisraeli, we can talk about next week. His yeshiva is Eretz Chemda. They would not be accepted either. It's very hard for them, Rabbi Carmel's yeshiva, it's very hard for them to become Dayanim because they won't let them on. But they are, obviously Rav Druckmann is from that school, and the traditional Pesach is not a single standard. You're correct, which is why this is very... Rav Moshe even makes it clear that he doesn't agree with certain Rabbani, but he's Malamed Zchus on why they did it, and... okay, we'll get back to this. This sounds like a very exciting panel. I know Rabbi Farber from many years ago. He's very adamant on this, and he also thinks that the RCA made a terrible mistake and is going to have to change their tune when they see really what's going on, because the chief rabbi doesn't control this. The Dayanim do, and they have no sympathy for the chief rabbi. And if you don't believe me, see Yateh last week, in which Rav Amar is spoken of like some pulpit rabbi with no following, and that he goes up against the Gedol Yisrael, when the truth is Rav Amar is a great, great posek, and everything he does comes directly from Rav Avadya Yosef. So you're really going to have a dispute here between Rav Avadya and the Lithuanian Haredim, and I guess we'll see how that happens. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, good night, everybody, and have a good one. We'll keep you...